So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we'll be chatting about Reddit and everything going on around there. The user revolt at Reddit, the API changes. We have a special guest to dive into all of that stuff. We'll also be talking about the MacBook Air 15, which Nathan Ingram just reviewed, and Gadget reviewed the Mac Studio, so we'll talk about some of those things. We've also got a bunch of other news, and we'll talk about some Summer Game Fest stuff, too. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. You can also check out our live stream Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. Join us. It's a fun time. You'll see a lot of behind-the-scenes action, and you can ask us questions. Sometimes we'll show off gadgets. Join us. So let's dive into Reddit. And to talk about this and to help break this down is Ryan Broderick. He has covered internet culture for over a decade all over the place, Ryan. And most recently at Garbage Day, the Substack newsletter. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Hello. Happy to be here. Happy to talk about my favorite website, Reddit.
It's
your favorite website's not Engadget. I'm very upset.
Oh, I'm sorry. My favorite platform.
Social
my favorite website
platform.
Is
I don't. Yes. Are they a social network?
Social reader?
I don't know. Let's recap quickly what's happening at Reddit. So there has been the company announced that they are going to be having a sweeping API change. They're going to be charging developers for API access. That led to some developers, especially like the popular Apollo app, which people prefer to the main Reddit app. They said that those changes would mean it would cost them, what, $20 million a year to run the site or to run the app. So that seems bad. There was widespread user revolt. Some subreddits, more than half of the subreddits on the site went dark this week. And that also led to a widespread instability on Reddit. Ryan, what is happening here? Why is Reddit falling apart like this just because of API changes?
Well, I mean, what's really funny is Reddit has always had this collective, I don't want to call it revolutionary spirit, but it's always been politically active. I mean, as recently as our anti-work, right? But going all the way back to the Arab Spring, Anonymous, it's been a hub for this stuff for a long time. And the heads of Reddit, the company, decided to screw with the one thing that Redditors care more about than anything, which is their third-party apps for making their lives on Reddit better. And that is just, I mean, if you meet any Redditor in the wild, they're going to talk to you about what third-party app they're using that isn't the main Reddit app because they hate the main Reddit app.
What's ironically, the main Reddit app was a third-party app, right? They bought that. They didn't build it. So they bought this thing and folded it in, and now everybody hates it because it's part of the part of the company. Okay.
The other point that's, I think, really important to mention here is that, and I wasn't totally aware of this until the protest started, which is that the majority of the large subreddits you see on r/all are using third-party software and tools to manage those subreddits because these are volunteers. No one's getting paid to manage, you know, r/all. I'm fairly certain. And they're using software that can moderate the spam, can sort out new users, can onboard people. And all of those tools are about to be bricked by these API changes.
What happened? Like, why did Reddit do this? Because it seemed like things were going along fine. The community seemed happy for a while. We also saw similar API changes at Twitter, and those seemed more vindictive and almost like a cost-saving measure for the Elon Musk era of Twitter. Why did Reddit decide to do this?
So, okay, there's the official reasons, and then there's the reasons people think it is, and then there's the super crazy conspiracies.
It wouldn't be Reddit without super crazy conspiracies. I mean, come on.
Of course, of course. I mean, that's half the fun. So I think the safest thing to say here is that Reddit is saying that they want quality control, right? They want to make sure that things are safer, they're secure, blah, 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 blah. And then there's the other thing, which is that most mainstream AI tools are using Reddit as their samples for machine learning. So Reddit, like Twitter, like many other large platforms right now, don't want their data hoovered up by anybody. And so part of the way you can block that a bit is by changing the way your API works. This was a big thing with Twitter. But yeah, the official line from Reddit is, this is about security, this is about safety, this is about making sure things work. And I have to imagine this is also related to, you know, their relationship with the Apple App Store, which has been complicated over the years with their hosting of not safe for work content. There's a whole bunch of reasons, but that's kind of where we are right now.
Is there any credit to the idea that also, yeah, not having third-party, like killing third-party apps is better for Reddit, right? Because a lot of those apps do not support ads. They don't have the same sort of like tracking capabilities that the main Reddit stuff does.
Funny yeah. that. Isn't that interesting yeah. that they don't? Yeah, interesting.
Funny how that worked out. Yeah, and yeah. This is a company that's like preparing to go for IPO after a very, very long time, like very private. So is that also part of it, you think?
I have to imagine it is. And I think any platform on the internet right now is very interested in figuring out how they can own and control the entire experience and keep people in there. That's how platforms work and that's how they've evolved. And Reddit has been this really interesting example of a platform that hasn't really done that. It's actually been fairly open to the point where it's kind of replaced Google for a lot of people. And I think that Reddit is now saying, wait a minute, you know, we want a piece of this. We want to make sure that we're owning and operating all of this stuff. And their users are not happy about that.
It is a weird change to do. Sherlyn, I know you're a big Redditor. Do you have any thoughts in terms of like what is happening here? Because I'll tell you, I gave up on Reddit like after the Gamergate stuff, and I hear it got better. I'll check it out more. But what do you think, Sherlyn?
It did get better. I'm one of those, like, I'm a big time, by big time, I mean like technically small time. I'm a big lurker. I spend a lot of time on Reddit. I feel like a bad Redditor because I don't have my third party app go to. I actually use an official app. And I don't mind the ads so much. I think one of the main problems with the Reddit app is they still haven't figured out a way to make spoilers not show up on, you know, the homepage and that sort of thing. Like dumb little issues like that. So I've known this was coming for a while, right? Because a lot of subreddits are like, oh, announcement, we're going dark, June 12th or 14th. I forget the date. What? Go see the outside world a little bit. I'm like, all right,
touch grass, yeah.
I guess I got to reinstall Instagram, you know? And the main thing I'm seeing nowadays, because I'm like, oh, it's June 15th or 14th yesterday. I was like, I can go back on Reddit and look at stuff again. Main thing I've been seeing is that people are back and they're announcing they're back. A lot of subreddits are like, we were late, but we're back. Our community is like, we're late, but we're back. But some have decided they're going dark indefinitely until they can negotiate some more, get some of the things they wanted back. And I believe API access is part of this. I also know that part of the discussion around this was API access was going to be granted to people who needed it for accessibility use. So things like screen readers could still navigate Reddit. So it's still very blurry and kind of unclear what's the future going to look like for Reddit. To this point, a lot of the subreddits that I follow, I think, are still going to be quite... like, it's not clear, right? Like, if Am I the Asshole never comes back, I will be very upset. If
I Best think the of Redditor updates, will be sad. Yeah,
I know. If Boru never comes back, I will be heartbroken. I don't think Boru's back yet, which has been very sad for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, Ryan. What is the future of Reddit looking like right now?
Well, in a very like monkey's paw kind of way, I do think this very successfully showed how important Reddit is to the ecosystem of, like, let's call it the American internet. I can't speak for other countries, but at least here, like, Reddit is kind of one of the central backbones of the web right now. It's one of the last sites that is open. You can read it. You don't need an account to read it. It's there. And I think it disappearing effectively for 2 days, I mean, it made my life harder. I realized I opened it up on Monday night after work, because usually like Reddit is where I go to unwind because I don't want to look at Twitter anymore. And it was all gone. And I was like kind of mad. And then as I had to Google stuff throughout the week, I was looking for recommendations on, you know, products or gadgets, or I was looking up like some trivia for a TV show, and I couldn't get any answers, but I could see the threads, which was the most annoying thing. I knew the information was in there. And so I definitely have a newfound respect for Reddit's place in the world.
It's one of those things.
And I have to imagine other people do
too. You won't really miss it until it's gone, I guess. So like we're getting a taste of that. Ryan, you've written about Reddit co-founder and CEO Steve Huffman and how attentive he is to the needs of the community of the site, right? This is a community-driven site. Clearly want to keep people happy to keep using it, right?
Yeah, he's notorious. So his username is Spez, and he just... I've been on Reddit for probably since college, so almost like 15 years. Yeah. And I feel like every single time that guy shows up in an AMA or does anything with the community in the comment section, he gets into fights with people. And obviously, I can relate. I've got a hot temper on the internet too, but I'm not running a massive social network. And I feel like every time he shows up, he makes things worse. And like, it's become like a punchline at this point. And to the point where during this week, during the protest, people were screenshotting his stuff and sharing it across all the major subreddits. That, you know, it was just, and then, you know, his comments leak out about how they're going to wait for this to pass. Right. So obviously all the subreddits are like, well, we're just going in dark indefinitely. I mean, it's nuts.
It's kind of wild too. I feel for his media handlers. I feel for his PR people, because he's the sort of guy, he's done a couple interviews recently. He did one at GQ recently where he was just like, oh yeah, he talked about why he hated TikTok, but also like, it got really into like, oh yeah, TikTok is clearly an arm of the Chinese state and it is surveilling us. And there is like conspiracy level stuff in his thinking. And also like he's one of those people pretending to be a free speech absolutist on the internet, except not quite, I guess. Like, I don't know. I always find that weird. Like Steve Huffman as a personality, Ryan, like he feels like the trollishness of Elon Musk maybe, but a little more toned down, but he does describe himself as a troll. So that probably doesn't help, right?
Oh, he's notorious. I mean, in many ways, he's sort of fitting for Reddit, which is that like, he's going to get in the comments and fight with everybody. But the difference is that like, those are his users. Yeah. Like it's kind of confounding. And his tenure at Reddit was sort of seen as, okay, Reddit's going to grow up now and it's going to become more professional and they're going to oust a lot of the original people. Or they're going to leave, let's say that. And yet every time he shows up, it's an absolute
circus. Very much the Dark Knight Rises meme, I guess, like the users. You thought you found the trolling. I was born to troll, basically. And it seems like he has created a whole persona and a whole site around that.
I didn't want to interrupt, but yeah. I don't know if this would interrupt the trajectory of where you were headed. But there's quite a few like great comments in our chat. Mark Dell goes, he'll sell Reddit to Elon, which nightmare of nightmares. Depro9 says, hopefully something better replaces both Reddit and Twitter. And Brian Mitchell brought up something that I know you want to talk about, Dev, which is that, back to using dig and slash dot for me.
Dig? Very good reminder there, because I am old enough to remember the online feud between Dig and Reddit, and I know people who were very good at gaming both of those sites early on, because we all had our little blogs and we all had to get eyeballs to our blogs, and it's like pumping up Reddit posts and dig posts was the best way to do that. Dig fell apart so quickly, like so spectacularly, and it almost, I see echoes of that here. Ryan, like, are you noticing that too?
Yeah, I love revisiting when social networks die. Mm-hmm. I think it's really instructive.
It's history, man.
Yeah, I think it's mass migrations of people, but just online, right? So big things tend to follow. And I think with Dig, it was interesting. So the TLDR, the really quick thing, is that Dig launched a redesign. Mm-hmm. that's literally Dig what it boiled V4, down to. They launched Dig V4 and people didn't like it. And Reddit, I think, was very shrewd. They created a place for Dig users to vent about it. And slowly that conversation just took over Reddit and they all left. And
that's very smart, actually.
It is smart. I mean, like, because Reddit is a really good place for discussion for the most part. I mean, you know, it's not perfect. And so with this thing, though, with this protest, it's interesting because you can kind of see that happening within Reddit itself, because Redditors want to talk about the protest. Reddit's a really good place for organizing, you know, political activity, good or bad. And one of the problems with boycotting Reddit is that the Redditors want to go talk about the boycott on Reddit. So I'm not sure how closely it will follow something like the Dig Reddit wars of the last decade, but I do think that spirit is still there.
For sure. I'm still feeling it. And I guess the lesson here, and maybe a bit of like Twitter too, like we are seeing echoes of what Elon Musk did to Twitter and how high level Twitter users are migrating to other places now too. I think we're seeing like, hey, these sites are powered by community members, right? And if the community members aren't there, and if they decide to go elsewhere, you have nothing, which seems like, to me, it seems like Steve Huffman should be doing more to appease the crowd rather than fight them. But I don't know. What's your take on that, Ryan? Like, these are so These platforms are nothing without their users, right?
You would think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they would be without their users. I don't know. Like,
it'd be like, yeah, they're it'd in be a like tough Tumblr spot. Without porn, basically, right? Mm. Like,
true.
And without fan stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's another really good example of this, yes, of this kind of thing happening. I think Tumblr is pretty good now, but based on what I've seen, they've almost recovered from where they were in 2018. I think it's fair to say they've kind of come through it, but it takes a long time. And I'm not sure if Reddit is prepared for 5 years of crawling back up if they lose their core audience. At the same time, and I've written about this a little bit, at the same time, if Reddit is willing to do something this drastic, I don't think they're healthy. Like, I think there's got to be some reason, like, you know, a sick animal, like that's what they're acting like. And I have to imagine there's something we don't know about the health of the company, because why would you do this?
Yeah.
Like,
yep. It seems purely financial, right? Or at least ahead of the IPO. Cause that's the story, right? Reddit was, it was bought by Condé Nast in the early 2010s and then spun back out, and Condé Nast owns a big interest in it, right? But it's private now and nobody has done that. Like, very few companies have done that. Everybody rushed to IPO basically. So I don't know. Maybe they should have done this earlier. I don't know. I guess to wrap up, Ryan, like, where do you think things are headed for Reddit and also like the social internet as a whole too? Because Twitter, the same thing is happening, right? I'm spending less time on Twitter. Those conversations have flowed to Mastodon and Blue Sky. It does seem like people are just like, we are in a weird phase of the internet right now where there is no ground for anybody to really stand on, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Twitter is probably a good example of where this could go, which is, you know, we have this... I think the MySpace Facebook transition kind of tricked everyone into thinking that it's always going to be one to one, but I don't think that's true. And I think what will most likely happen is if Reddit goes forward with this and they break a bunch of stuff and they piss a lot of people off, those people will leave. And we've already seen like bad subreddits like the Donald create their own. There's an out of the box software you can get to make a subreddit that isn't a subreddit. And in the same way that there's not one Twitter replacement, there's a bunch. I could definitely see a bunch of Reddit replacements just popping up. A lot of subreddits moving wholly over. I've also seen a lot of migration to Discord, although at the same time, I'm hearing a lot of drama about how Discord is evolving because there's a lot of instability at that company and there's a lot of weird products that people don't like being pushed
on users.
And
Discord's outside the internet, too. Like, it's a whole separate thing.
Right.
It's not Google indexable right. and stuff. So,
But I think the main point is that the ability to copy the core utility of Web 2.0 platforms has gotten so good, and that anyone can do it. And I think a lot of these companies kind of know that. And so they're trying really hard to like grab everyone one last time. And I don't think it's going to work.
Let's milk some money out of you before I retire. Right. Yeah.
And I just have to think that like everyone's going to go off into their own little corners and it's going to be kind of quiet and weird for a while. But also kind of exciting, because like that period of time, I was a teenager when the internet was like that, and it was a weird place. It was a way weirder place, but it was kind of exciting. And it doesn't last forever.
I mean, yeah, this feels like a transition period. Well, you know what, Ryan? I know a few things on the internet that won't betray us. That's newsletters as a technology, such as Garbage Day. So everybody go subscribe to Garbage Day. And also podcasts, everybody. We are based on RSS and Nothing Can Control podcasts. So think about that. And the platforms that you love, folks, because when you're trapped to like these companies, you don't really have control, right? Or at least you don't really have full control of your content. Thank you so much, Ryan. Where can people find you on the internet? And, you know, what else are you working on these days?
You can read my newsletter. GarbageDay.email is the newsletter. And you can follow my very bad Twitter feed, which is @Broderick. And I'm on Blue Sky. If you have it, just search my name. Yeah. Oh, I guess I can say this because they've made unique usernames now. I have my Discord is Garbage Ryan. So look that up and you'll find me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan. Okay. Thanks so much to Ryan for joining us to talk about Reddit. But we've got actual gadgets to talk about, folks. We've got the MacBook Air 15 reviewed on the site, and I also reviewed the new Mac Studio. I tried to get Nate Ingram on to talk about his experience with the MacBook Air 15, but he's busy actually shooting the video for that thing now, too. So I just want to point you all to it. He gave this thing a score of 96, which is the exact same score I gave the MacBook Air 13. That is surprisingly high for us at the site. I will say on my end, I got to 96 because we've been reviewing the MacBook Air for so long, it's gotten consistently better over time. And then by this one, with the redesign last year, it's so thin. It's so fat. It is like the perfect computer. So that's why I think it deserved it. And I think Nate feels the same way. He thinks this is like the best big screen Apple computer for sure.
I tend to be in agreement with both of you here. The only thing I would complain about, and I would have actually docked a point from this had I thought about it more deeply before the review went up, is for a larger machine, this thing has the same number of ports.
Yep.
I wish there were at least one more USB-C or Thunderbolt 4 on the other side, right? Right now, they're all lined up on the left. There's two. And the MagSafe charger is also on the left. And if you can just move one of those. I just want to charge my laptop on another side.
I totally asked Apple this too. I was like, you guys have space. You have the space. Give me another port on the other side.
Yeah.
Something. But you know what? Most recently, Dell with their XPS 13 remake or their last redesign. Not the plus. Maybe also the plus, but okay. They don't have headphone jacks. Like they got so thin at the keyboard side.
Right. At least the headphone jacks still here.
The base XPS 13 and the plus do not have headphone jacks anymore. At least these do. And I used that quite a bit when I was doing our work over at the WWDC. So, hey, at least we got that. I agree, though. I would have docked it. And also, I think it's clear that this machine should have come out last year. I think they had planned to do the 13 and 15 at the same time because this is running the same M2 chip that, you know, that came out last year. So
Exactly. You would think a little bit bigger room, bigger, more power, more ports, more like you know, maybe not a pro all the way it's pro not, machine,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Some
additions. It does have better speakers. So there is that. Kind of the same battery life. I think the trackpad is also a little bigger than the 13. So there's that. But anyway, yes. Nate really liked it. I've played with it. I've touched it. I think it's very good if you really want a 50-inch machine, just because Apple had nothing. It had nothing beyond the MacBook Air 16, or the MacBook Pro 16, which is so much more expensive and maybe too powerful for a lot of people and so heavy. For 3.5 pounds. Yeah,
it's almost so thin. Yeah.
For 3.5 pounds, like this machine is fantastic. Do you have any other thoughts on the MacBook Air 15, Sherlyn?
KP in our chat says the perfect computer should not have a notch and then trolley face. So yeah, I mean the camera does have a notch,
but I don't mind because the title bar kind of lives between it, and you don't notice. Like you don't notice it. It's fine.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise, I think this laptop seems really solid. I think it does deserve the pretty high score. But I'm worried, like, where do we go from here?
That's kind of how it is, especially as like we start to score higher and higher. Honestly, I think the new XPS 13 was a bit of a step down for Dell. So I didn't have time to fully review that, but maybe we'll do that. I also reviewed the Mac Studio, the new M2 Ultra model, and I just want to say my big takeaway here is I think the Mac Pro just doesn't need to exist anymore. I think for most users, like this is essentially the Mac Pro because it has so much I/O, it has so much power. You can configure it with a ton of freaking RAM. It's sealed. You can't get inside. But even with the Mac Pro, by the way, you cannot add extra RAM because the RAM is unified on the system on a chip. So there goes like one of the big reasons you used to get a Mac Pro. You can expand the storage, but it's like by a very limited amount. There's just like less of a reason, unless you're one of those crazy folks who need those PCI cards to do like video, pro level video work. You don't need the Mac Pro. So the Mac Studio, especially this higher end one, this is the $4,000 model. It is so ridiculously fast. If you are still running an Intel Mac Pro or an Intel system, but you're a creator who does encoding work, this is the system you want to buy. There's also a $2,000 model, which is not going to be as fast. That has the M2 Max chip, but it also has the same amount of I/O. It has Thunderbolt 4 and stuff for you to use. One annoying thing about this one is that the front ports, it has two convenient USB-C ports on the front, but you have to get the $4,000 M2 Ultra model for those to be Thunderbolt 4 ports. Otherwise, they're standard USB-C, USB 3 ports, which make them much, much slower. I would say they didn't need to make that distinction, you know? It just seems weird. I also wish the headphone jack was right up front rather than around the back. But yeah.
Yep.
I've talked to a lot of video editors and they're like, man, I plug in my headphones so much. I really wish that was more accessible. At the very least, this thing isn't very big. You can just like pull it forward and plug in a thing when you need to. So there is that. Have you seen this thing in action, Trillin? It's a beautiful computer.
No, I haven't actually seen it, but I am intrigued. I will say this does, like, I wanted to know, this does complete the transition, right, over to Intel. I mean, over away from Intel, over
Pro,
to Apple
yeah.
Silicon. Mm-hmm. And Apple mentioned that, right, at the WWDC event. And, I mean, what, they lived up to their promise, right? They said 2 years, I think.
I think they were late by 1 year.
When they said 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they were a little bit late, a little bit behind, but they did. And I'm not sure if Rosetta is still kind of in between, because mm-hmm. that's where my nervousness, right? So it's still there. And when we move over to these very high-powered machines like the Mac Pro, Mac Studio, and we are using Apple Silicon, I am more and more, you know, curious about how the emulator layer is working. And it seems to still be doing fine. And we don't know if
And a lot of people have made their apps native too, and they... I was more interested in like the PCI cards, like the PCIe cards. Like these are not meant to work with an ARM-based chip, but Apple says a lot of their partners have done the work to get that stuff over and to translate it into M2 architecture. So, yeah, the Mac Pro's there for the folks who need it. That's I think no like personal user, no professional who's on their own will ever buy that. But if you work for Disney. Yes, if you're working on the latest Marvel movie or something, yes, you get the fastest freaking thing with all the ports you need to get that movie out faster because, you know, that $7,000 is nothing to Disney. So that's why that computer exists. We are still waiting for a refresh of the iMac. The iMac is still running an M1 chip.
But not,
it's not Intel
anymore.
So. I don't think they're selling the Intel one anymore. But yeah, I'm sure we're going to see an iMac redo soon. I don't know if they're ever going to try to do like a better, faster iMac, like the iMac Pro that they tried for a little while and that completely failed. But, you know, that's a thing. If you're an Apple user and you've been sitting tight, I think last year was unclear what the Mac Studio was, right? Is this a weird transition product that is just exists until the Mac Pro comes out? And now it's like, no, this is actually a very clear indication of what Apple's doing. And that is, this is the machine you want for most creative professionals. And I also reviewed earlier this year, the Mac Mini got an M2 Pro chip. So even that has like a faster tier in it for, I think it's over $1,000. So, and then you have the base level Mac Mini, which is like $600-$700. So Apple is covering like all ends of the market here. And yeah, it's funny to see that story finally done. Let us know what you think, folks. Like, will you be getting a Mac Studio? I would love to know who is intrigued by this thing. And if you are, let us know if you're going for the Macs or the Ultra chip. Let's move on to some other news real quick. There was some big news around Microsoft's proposed acquisition of Activision Blizzard. The FTC filed an injunction to block the deal this week, which is in addition to the FTC suing to block that deal. The injunction would just do it immediately. And we just saw some recent news overnight, too. Now, Microsoft and Activision are asking the FTC or the government to speed up proceedings on that challenge because the deal, let me just see here. They had set a June 22nd or 23rd hearing to block this thing, but July 18th was the agreed termination date for the deal. So if this thing isn't resolved, if they cannot appeal the injunction or if they can't like appease the FTC by July 18th, Microsoft will owe a $3 billion termination fee. And also that the deal is effectively dead. They would have to go back together, these companies, and renegotiate it. This is just a huge mess. And it's also really confusing, too, because the EU, the European Commission, approved the deal. Britain's regulatory body denied the deal because of competition reasons. And I think the FTC is kind of doing the same thing. They're worried about too much consolidation in the video game market. And similarly, I think they're also worried about the future of like game streaming, which Microsoft is far ahead of other companies on. I don't know if they're talking, I don't think they've really talked about Game Pass and the way like Game Pass bundles things in together, but that's another potential issue there. I don't know if you have any thoughts about this, Rolin, but this is a big deal. This is Microsoft's biggest acquisition ever. It's a $69 billion acquisition. It seems like a bad thing if this doesn't go through for them, but I personally don't think it should.
I mean, I feel bad for Microsoft, right? It's been trying to buy like TikTok. It's been trying to buy,
I don't feel bad.
It's been trying to buy a lot of shit and then not. I know. I don't really feel bad like on a human level. I guess on a troll level, I'm like, haha, feel bad for you. Haha, you know. I far be it for me to call something competitive or anti-competitive. I couldn't tell you the gaming world. It feels like there is enough competition for Microsoft from Sony and from other studios, it depends too if you're talking about like game making or hardware or like platform. You know, there's just so many ways to compete that it feels like I don't know enough of the ins and outs to tell you if this is a wise decision on the parts of all the regulatory bodies, but I will watch.
We'll keep an eye on it. Yeah, this story is not done yet. The reason I'm saying is because I'm just kind of against consolidation so much at this point too. We are seeing, what was the big studio? Oh, Embracer Group, the one we've been talking about that's been swallowing up so many studios and so many things. They are laying off a big chunk of their workers because they were depending on this like $2 billion deal that fell apart at the very last minute. And that company is now in severe trouble because it was such a big thing. And when you consolidate, you're like, it's like a Katamari ball, right? You're building more and more chunks. You're taking over the world. You're plowing through the industry. But if something breaks that ball, it is a big mess and it affects a lot of lives and it could hurt the industry too when things like that fail. So that's my feelings, but you know what, folks, podcastengadget.com, let us know what you think. We've got some news from Summer Game Fest as well. I was not there, but we have a bunch of folks there, including Matt Smith, Jessica Conda, and Aaron Tsouporis. Just want to highlight a couple things I noticed here. Jess took a look at Alan Wake 2, which is probably the game I am looking forward to the most coming out of this. First of all, my God, we have a sequel to Alan Wake. I was super excited about that. I got so buzzed when we got like Alan Wake stuff within Control, and Remedy was basically building this unified universe for all their weird games. It just didn't get to play it. It was a hands-off demo for her, so she watched somebody else play it. But it is centered around an FBI agent, a black FBI agent named Saga. And she, you're going to be playing alongside her and Alan Wake too. And Alan Wake was the mystery author who is trapped in this this weird mystery universe. Very Twin Peaks-y in the first game. It seems like he is still there. But Saga is also trying to solve the mystery from the FBI side. The whole thing is very Twin Peaks. I don't know. You'll probably never play these games, Sherlyn, but if you want some weird, nice, like semi-horror lore,
yeah, sounds fun.
You should check out some videos around Alan Wake because it's some good stuff.
What platform?
Alan Wake was on pretty much every platform. It's like a decade old at this point. But Alan Wake 2.
I don't think Alan Wake
ever got to Switch. I don't know if the remake did.
Okay, but I can play it on an iNeo, maybe?
Probably. Yeah, if it's a PC thing. This game, Alan Wake 2, is due to hit PC, Xbox Series X and S, and PlayStation 5 on October 17th, and I cannot wait. Jess also took a look at South of Midnight, which is a Southern Gothic monster adventure. Southern Gothic is a genre I don't think games ever really touch on very much, and as somebody who is in the South right now, and like, you know, there are things I encounter, It's a very creepy vibe, and I love to see it explored here. So I think this game looks super cool. Have you seen any of the reporting at a Game Fest, Cher, that you wanted to highlight?
I've been looking at Jess's Instagram and some of her bylines. I know she was reporting something on Ubisoft, but I'm not sure if that was related to Summer Game Fest.
Yeah, it was after the Ubisoft stream, which showed off like not much. But Jess also did a piece saying Ubisoft needs a reboot, and I agree. You can't rely on Assassin's Creed games forever, right?
So there's been a lot of great reporting from Jess and the team from Summer Game Fest. I still need to catch up because I came back from WWDC and was sick for a while, so barely pay attention to anything.
One thing
other than my bed.
I think, Sherlyn, you should check out the trailer for Baby Steps, which is a fun-looking game from Bennett Foddy, who has made cult games, I'd say, like Getting Over It, which is, that was a game about a guy in a pot who had like a pickaxe and he had to rotate it for him to like move forward. Baby Steps looks like it's a game where you are trying to help a man in a onesie, like a true fail son man in a onesie, walk through the world and just try to, you know, do something with his life, I guess. But he's going on an adventure. The intro of the trailer is like him being a basement dweller who's stuck at home with no job, right? And his parents are like, this kid has to do something. The game is entirely you walking forward, like you controlling how he walks, but it looks funny, it looks irreverent, and I cannot wait to see how this thing goes. Just
like Untitled Goose Game,
very much, kind of, but very much like that.
Is it Goose Duck game or Goose Game? I guess Goose Game.
Duck Game. I feel like Duck Hunt took all the Duck Games, right? Let's move on to what we're working on. Sherlyn, anything you got going on?
Yeah, I got a surprise for everybody. Ooh. Since the embargo just lifted this morning, I am playing with The Moto Razr Plus. I am reviewing it. We are checking it out. For those who are unaware, the Moto Razr Plus is the next generation of Moto's flip style foldable. One of the standout features is it's got a much larger screen than on a lot of other flip style phones we've seen, especially like the Galaxy Z Flip 4, even I think Xiaomi Oppo Find N2, something like that. There's a bunch of other flip ones. Obviously, I'll be directly comparing it more to other devices that are available in the US, namely the Galaxy Z Flip 4. And there's some pretty good upgrades here. So I don't know if you want me to, you know, if you have any specific questions about this device, you let me know. I'm just gonna, you know, for this podcast, I'm gonna take a selfie with it right now because
Take a selfie. I mean, just from what I can see right here, I really like the screen up top. It is like big and nicely blended into the full top half. That is bigger than what Samsung did, right? For the flip?
Yes, much bigger. So this is one That's of the cool. biggest screens around. The exact dimension escapes me right now. There's a lot of like little shortcuts. So I don't know. For those of you on the stream, you can see what I just did, why I twisted my wrist a couple of times, and now the camera's open.
Is that, I don't know if you can see it. That brings me back to like the Moto X, right? The Moto X had these weird ass gestures you used to do a couple of things. Man, Moto X, that was a time.
It did. I'm trying to get it to take a photo, but it's got like, welcome. I'm like, just take the photo. Jesus.
I do like this big.
It's not taking it's like the photo. This is annoying me.
So if you ever want to like have like, you know, a tiny little smartphone screen out, that seems useful. Anything else you're working on, Trillin?
I have some other reviews I'm working on that I can't quite talk about just yet. But if you think really hard, you probably will know what it is. Trying to recover.
You've been sick for a long time. So everybody send Trillin good vibes. I hope you can get some rest too. I'm hopefully not working on anything else. There's something I'm going to talk about in our pop culture picks. But I'm going to be off for the next 2 weeks. So hopefully nothing else. Good God. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Trillin, what do you got?
This is hard for me because I struggle with making recommendations of personalities sometimes because you can never really tell if they're going to do a 180 degree flip and just become bad people.
You never know where they're going to milkshake duck. Yeah.
Right. Like I will be like watching YouTube and really enjoying some random. I've made recommendations in the past on this podcast of people that I really liked. And then it turns out, like, remember when I recommended the Ellen DeGeneres show? Like that worked out well for me.
I mean, she was pretty popular for a long time. So that's not just on you. Yeah.
And she, look, her ethos of like the whole be kind thing is really what I was.
It's a great ethos.
About, right?
I wish
Rather
she lived
than
it. Yeah.
Her as a personality. Yeah. Exactly. So I still, you know, recommend being kind, but I don't know if I recommend the Ellen DeGeneres show. A is off the air. B, whatever. But here this week, instead of saying I recommend this person, I will say I've been watching a lot of a specific YouTuber, 16 Leo, SIXTEENLEO _ on their socials. Just a very funny, low-key, chill vibe, similar to D'Angelo Wallace back when D'Angelo Wallace was around a lot more. But very like funny, critical commentaries on things going on in the world and TV shows. So like he did a 5-hour long deep dive of Love is Blind or something, or Too Hot to Handle, something, one of those Netflix dating shows. And I was like, wait, who actually has the time to upload a 5.5-hour video to YouTube?
But then I watched it all.
I would go in and out, but I watch it all. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is the secret of totally
like
watch
extra long content, right? Because it's like you'll have it on in the background. You'll like eat it piecemeal, but
yeah.
Okay. That's very cool.
Exactly. I keep coming back to it. I keep rewinding and coming back to it. It's like a whole day watch fest. It's the perfect thing to put on the background, on in the background when I am working or like I'll leave some of this stuff on when I want to sleep and I'm like, oh, it's so soothing. So anyway, yeah, I've been watching 16 Leo. And if you are interested in like catching up on pop culture and society stuff, you can. And it's funny. It's usually a good time. And 16 Leo does seem to say, you know, thoughtful stuff about how to be a good person. But I don't know if I fully vouch for 16 Leo as a person.
There you go. I
mean,
there's a lot. It's tough these days. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe they will become problematic at some point, or maybe something will come up. They maybe were sexist, racist, misogynistic in the past. I don't know.
Based on your information now.
But right now, I am enjoying it.
You're recommending them.
Yeah. Based on what I know right now.
Okay.
That was fun. But what's up, Dev? What should I watch instead?
When you were done binging this YouTuber,
yeah.
Man, check out Black Mirror Season 6. Black Mirror is back, and I'm working on a review right now. I think the embargo is up, actually, for other sites. But I did not really care for the last few seasons of Black Mirror. It felt like society had caught up with, like, the vision of tech dystopia that Charlie Brooker was building. And I love the early Black Mirror, too. So it was a lot of things. And I also think he started pumping out ideas too quickly for Netflix, and they weren't, like, fully formed. This season, very good. Very interesting. And each episode, like, deals with very different concepts. He introduces the idea of Streamberry, which is a Netflix alternative that exists in the the universe. And at times it seems like he is commenting on Netflix and streaming culture itself. There's, like, a true crime thing that is really interesting. I will not spoil any of these scenarios here. I think what is interesting is that so many of these things do not take place today or in the near future. A lot of them are in the past, like in the early 2000s or in the 1950s/1960s. And I was thinking, like, you know what? It is actually much easier to do these things when you're not in a world with smartphones, right? Because you can build a thriller where people aren't, like, immediately connected to instant GPS and super fast internet. That is a problem screenwriters are talking about right now. And whenever you see a movie that is not set today or in the future, it is because they want to have, like, simple things. Like, I want it to be a problem when somebody can't call somebody, you know, they don't have the best smartphone. I find that really interesting. I think the ideas Charlie Brooker is exploring here are really good. At times it goes full horror as a horror movie type of thing. And Black Mirror was always, like, dystopian tech horror a little bit, but never, I don't think it ever fully went there.
No, there was one episode that was true horror, the robot dog one.
I don't know Boston if you call Dynamics. That horror, but yeah, it's very much like, yeah, it's an action thriller that felt more like, but yes, he goes full horror here. There's one that features a demon. There is one that features something I will not even mention here, and they're all fun and interesting and have really good twists, so I think you'll really enjoy it. And you know what, Sherlyn, like, I watch a lot of unscripted content too from YouTube creators and stuff, but it is another thing to, like, be in, okay, somebody wrote a story, right? They wrote a plot, they wrote characters, they wrote a thing they're telling me. And that is, it is so much more rewarding when I watch these things. This season of Black Mirror has a lot of good stuff. There's one episode that I think is really ambitious, but maybe doesn't really quite hit the mark. And I will not spoil anything. I will just say, go check it out. It is the one that involves space, and I'm not fully, like, into where it lands. But I recommend it to you, Sherlyn. I recommend it to all of our listeners. Black Mirror Season 6. It is back, baby. Thank you, Charlie Brooker, for once again commenting on our society. You know, listen, the last season of Black Mirror was 2019. A lot has changed in the world since 2019.
Ooh, that's been a while ago.
The combined pandemic, living through a pandemic, the very quick rise of fascism across the world, to be honest, more climate issues. Like, we are more on the brink of an apocalypse now than we were just a few years ago, and you can feel it. And I think you can kind of sense that in Black Mirror, too. So anyway, check it out. Go rewatch the other stuff, too. If you've never seen Black Mirror, start in the first season. It's so good.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, at Devendra at Mastodon, that social on the Elephant site, and I'm on Blue Sky too at Devendra. I still don't know how to juggle all these sites, but I'm looking for a new home, just like Reddit people.
If you have any real cute or deep cut or long deep dive subreddits to recommend, send them to me. I'm at Sherlyn Low on Twitter. I'm also at Sherlynstagram on Instagram. And a lot of things that I'm juggling as well, like Devendra, but those two are the longest running ones. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. If Am I the Asshole never comes back, I will be very upset. If Best of Redditor updates, I know. If Boru never comes back, I will be heartbroken.